taking up the holy war, the writings of Bunyan in the holy war, at that paragraph which begins with these words, "Now the reason why Diabolus did so soon rally another force." Last class we saw that force, that great force that he had amassed, rallied again. He was not satisfied with the work of the doubters. They had not accomplished his purpose in the full and total destruction of man's soul. And so, he now rallies again a group of doubters, 10,000 doubters, but then he also gathered together 15,000 floodmen. And these are the men represented in his allegory and his writing. These are the men who represent persecution to saints. Now, here is the reason why Diabolus did so soon rally another force after he had been beaten out of the field. It was for that he put mighty confidence in this army of bloodmen. He really believed that what the doubters had failed to accomplish, these bloodmen would get it done. Besides this, for he put a great deal of more trust in them than he did before in his army of doubters, though they had also often done great service for him in the strengthening of him in his kingdom. But these bloodmen, he had proved them often, and their sword did seldom return empty. Besides, he knew that these, like mastiffs, would fasten upon any, upon father, mother, brother, sister, prince, or governor, yea, upon the prince of princes. And that which encouraged him the more was that they once did force Emmanuel out of the kingdom of the universe. And why, thought he, may they not also drive him from the town of man's soul? So this army of 25,000 strong was, by their general, the great Lord Incredulity, led up against the town of man's soul. Now, Mr. Prowell, the scoutmaster general, did himself go out to spy, and he did bring Mansoul tidings of their coming. Wherefore, they shut up their gates and put themselves in a posture of defense against these new Diabolians that came up against the town. Now, of course, this is, you'll remember Mr. Prowell and his part that he played earlier. Mr. Prywell, he pries into all things, he searches things out, and he is called the Scoutmaster General, because he goes and he searches things out and he finds them out. And of course he found out this, he found out that this army was on its way to man's soul. Our commentator says that the same principle, this Mr. Prywell, the same principle, self-examination, that discovered the former plot is again represented as guarding the interests of the soul on this occasion. Here it would be the inner conscience and firm persuasion of the soul, abundantly convinced that the part it has chosen is the good part, so that though bonds and afflictions await the man of God, he knows in whom he has believed and is prepared to abide the consequences of his profession and possession of the faith of Christ. The martyrs of the Church of Christ were men whose convictions were strong, whose faith was firm, whose love was earnest, and whose consistency was steadfast even unto death. Their self-examination that is inquiry as to their faith, hope, and love, rendered them proof against the doubts that assailed the feelings at Fieldgate. The instruments of torture that were exposed before their view at Eyegate, and the tempting or taunting words that were addressed to their hearing at Eargate, were powerless to withdraw them from the testimony of Jesus. Mr. Prowell has searched out, done his job, scouted out, and discovered this army on its way to man's soul. Bigger, more frightening, because of consisting of these 15,000 blood men. Bunyan says, so Diabolus brought up his army, beleaguered the town of Mansoul. The doubters were placed about Fieldgate, and the bloodmen sat down before Eyegate and Eargate. Now, when this army had thus encamped themselves, incredulity did, in the name of Diabolus, his own name, and in the name of the bloodmen and the rest that were with him, sent a summons as hot as a red-hot iron to man's soul to yield to their demands, threatening that if they still stood out against them, they would presently burn down man's soul with fire. For you must know that, as for the bloodmen, they were not so much that man's soul should be surrendered as that man's soul should be destroyed and cut off out of the land of the living. Now remember, Bunyan is saying here, remember, these persecutors, these bloodmen, they're not so much interested in seeing man's soul change their view. They're interested in seeing them destroyed. They want them dead. They're bloodmen. This is what they want. They want blood. They want man's soul absolutely destroyed. Berger said persecution will be satisfied with nothing less than the utter destruction of the Christian. Even a surrender will not suffice, as some too yielding professors have found to their cost. Witness good Archbishop Cranmer, who recanted through fear and yet was put to death by the bloody Papists. They're not satisfied with surrender. They're not satisfied with recanting or changing. They want them dead. They want them killed. They want them wiped out. They want them punished. They want them burned up. That really hasn't changed. That hasn't changed. Those who would persecute the Church of the Living Christ right now, China, other places, They're not interested in seeing these people change their mind. They want to destroy it. Nothing short of it. Bunyan says, true, they sent to them to surrender. But should they so do, that would not stench or quench the thirst of these men. They must have blood, the blood of man's soul, else they die. And it is from hence that they have their name, bloodmen. Wherefore these bloodmen he reserved while now, now that they might, when all his engines proved ineffectual, as his last and sure card, he played against the town of Mansoul. He's tried everything else, and it's all failed. Now, he'll bring the blood. Now when the townsmen had received this red hot summons, it begat in them at present some changing and interchanging thoughts. But they jointly agreed in less than half an hour to carry the summons to the prince, the which they did when they had writ it at the bottom of it, Lord, save man's soul, or let him in. They had some thoughts. They were changing and interchanging their thoughts. You get the image there, Bunyan, that they are reeling from this shocking news. That now, it's no longer the doubters they got to worry about. It's no longer the men who would draw them into the world they got to worry about. Now it's men who want nothing less than their blood. And they are reeling from this intelligence. Until finally they just decide, we're going to have to take this before the prince. And we're going to write a petition at the a plea at the bottom of it. Lord, save us. Save us from this. So he took it and looked upon it and considered it and took notice also of that short petition men of man's soul had written at the bottom of it. And he called to him the noble prince Credence and bid him go and take Captain Patience with him and take care of that side of man's soul that was beleaguered by the blood. He's sending relief out. Who's he sent? Captain Credence and Captain Patience. They're going to have to be patient. And they're going to have to trust. So they went and did as they were commanded. Captain Credence went and took Captain Patience. And they both secured that side of man's soul that was beleaguered by the bloodman. Then he commanded that Captain Goodhope and Captain Cherry and my Lord Wilbywill should take charge of the other side of the town. And I, said the prince, will set my standard upon the battlements of your castle, and do you three watch against the doubters. You watch against the doubters. Mason said, Let us beg of the Lord to make good his promise, namely in Isaiah 59:19, when the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord shall lift up a standard against him. Mason says, let us not forget that petition and that promise when we face an hour like this. So the Lord says, I'll raise up my standard. This done, he again commanded that the brave Captain Experience, should draw up his men in the marketplace, and that there he should exercise them day by day before the people in the town of Mansoul. Now, what's happening here? What's happening here? Captain Experience needs to pull his men together. And he needs to let them work out their maneuverings, their training, their exercises in the midst of the town so that the town has something to strengthen their hearts. What is it going to strengthen their hearts? Captain Experience. It's always good for the believer to look back and realize we've been in desperate places before, and he's never failed us. And they watch daily. They watch Captain Experience with his men doing their maneuvers. And it should lift them and encourage them, strengthen them, to remember past experiences. Now, this siege was long many a fierce attempt that the enemy, especially those called the Bloodmen, make upon the town of Mansoul. And many a shrewd brush did some of the townsmen meet with from them, especially Captain Self-Denial, who I should have told you before was commanded to take care of Ear Gate and Eye Gate, now against the Bloodmen. This Captain Self-Denial was a young man, but stout, and a townsman in man's soul, as Captain Experience also was. And Emmanuel, at his second return to man's soul, made him a captain over 1,000 of the Mansoulians for the good of the corporation. The Lord had made this fella Self-Denial. He'd made him a ruler over 1,000. For Self-Denial, that really comes into play when it comes to persecution, doesn't it? You have to be willing to deny yourself. You have to be willing to deny yourself. And be patient. And hope. Berger said persecution, it was through faith and patience that the ancient believers inherited the promises. These graces, therefore, are judiciously opposed to the persecutors, and nothing less will sustain the soul in the time of trial. Nothing less than faith and patience. A time of persecution loudly calls for the exercise of self-denial. When this prevails, the terrors of the persecution are diminished. See, the heart's not going to be terrorized if the heart isn't holding out for itself. It denies itself. It gives itself up to the Lord to do what He will. And there's peace in that. There's great peace in that. This captain, that's Captain Self-Denial, therefore, being a hearty man, and a man of great courage, and willing to venture himself for the good of the town of man's soul, would now and then sally out upon the Bloodmen and give them many noble alarms, and entered several brisk skirmishes with them, and also did some execution upon them. The enemy doesn't know what to do with self-denial. I mean, when the believer, instead of putting up a wall of resistance, extends himself out and says, I'm in the Lord's hands. Do what you will. Self-denial. The enemy doesn't know what to do with that. Mason said, while we fight the Lord's battles, indwelling sin gives us many a wound. Pride and self-righteousness cleave to us. We need the blood of Christ to cleanse our best services and render them acceptable to the Lord so that we might exercise self-denial. Bunyan goes on to say, but you must think that this could not easily be done, but he must meet with brushes himself, for he carried several of their marks in his face and some in some other parts of his body. This fellow Self-Denial, he's going to take some severe blows. Don't think that just because you have reached the posture in your heart of self-denial, willingness to self-denial, that that's the end of the battle. No. This fellow Self-Denial, he's got a lot of scars. He's met with a lot of blows in every part of his body. He's a fellow that's going to suffer. Because that's just what self-denial does. Our commentator, speaking of self-denial, said this, in the face of threatening danger, there is no more effective ally to the soul than the principle of self-denial. Self-indulgence is not the spirit of martyrs. It needs a stronger principle to enable a man to resist the bloodmen of persecution. Self-denial is the discipline of the Christian man. It is the discipline of the Christian man. He has to fight the good fight, therefore he must be bred and inured to hardship. He has to sail the voyage of life and must therefore be strong to face the tempests and brave the billows of the deep. First, he said self-denial is a discipline. In that same paragraph, secondly, he says self-denial is the medicine of the soul. It's not always sweet. Most frequently bitter. But it's medicine. And thirdly, he says self-denial is the foundation of manly heroism. Manly heroism. Boy, there's something we're missing today, isn't it? Self-denial is the foundation of manly heroism and of all the heroic virtues, seeking not her own. This is a cross-bearing place, even to the mount of sacrifice. Self-denial thinks more of tomorrow's sunshine than the tempest of today. It provides for the time to come at the cost of the time now present, and walks by faith of future glory and not by the sight of present sufferings, choosing rather to suffer affliction, having respect unto the recompense of reward. Martyrs have always been self-denying men. You see what he's saying? Self-denial and willingness to suffer is always looking beyond the suffering. That's the foundation. That's what it sits on. That's what gives it the strength to stand, looking beyond these sufferings to tomorrow. Again, Mason has a comment. He said it is necessary that we should guard our senses because they are the avenues of numberless temptations. But the office of self-denial is of much greater extent and alms at nothing less than the government of the whole soul within itself. Till every thought is brought into captivity to Christ. The proper antagonist of self-denial is self-will. The learned Mr. J. Smith, in his excellent book entitled Select Discourses, has thus described the nature and force of this antagonist, that is, self-will. Listen to his description of self-will. There is nothing in the world so boisterous as a man's own self-will, which is never guided by any fixed or steady rules, but is perpetually hurried to and fro by a blind and furious pride, impetus of pride and passion issuing from within itself. This is the true source and spring of all that envy, malice, bitterness of spirit, malcontentedness, impatience. Of all those black and dark passions, those inordinate desires and lusts that reign in the hearts and lives of wicked men, a man's own self-will throws him out of all employment of his own being. Therefore, it was our Savior's counsel to his disciples, in patience possess ye your souls. We may say of that self-will which is lodged in the heart of a wicked man, as the Jews speak of the figmentum. How do you pronounce that? Figmentum malum. So often mentioned in their writings, that it is the prince of death and darkness, which is at continual enmity with heaven, and filthiness of poison of the serpent, that is self-will. This is the seed of the evil spirit, which is perpetually at enmity with the seed of God and the heaven-born nature. Its design and scope is with a giant-like pride to climb up into the throne of the Almighty and establish an unbounded tyranny in contradiction to the will of God, which is nothing else but the efflux and issue of His eternal and unbounded goodness. So the description that this writer gives of the self-will is pretty gross. It is that element in man that would, if it could, climb up to the very throne of God and cast him down. Then he adds, the excellent and noble spirit of true religion appears in that it tames the impetuousness and turbulence of this self-will. Then indeed does religion perform the highest and bravest conquests. Then does it display the greatness of strength and the excellency of its power when it overcomes that which has so firmly seated itself in the center of the soul. This was the grand lesson which Christ came to teach us. This indeed is the true life and spirit of religion. This is religion in the meridian attitude, attitude. It's just dimensions. A true Christian that hath power over his own will may live nobly and happily. Let me repeat that last line. A true Christian that hath power over his own will may live nobly and happily. But it's just achieving that, right? That's where the problem is. Achieving that power over our own will. Self-will. What is the solution for self-will? Self-denial. Because I want it, I should have it. No. I should not have it. Because I should not want it. Denying ourselves. And we struggle with that. That was really something of the message this morning, wasn't it? We struggle with denying ourselves. We struggle with this whole thing of putting our priorities aside and setting God's priorities before us. Continue. We set out with great intentions, don't we? And we set out with great intentions every week. And we're not far into it before self rears its ugly head again and says, but I won't. But I won't. This, that, or the other. It's a battleground. It's a holy war. It's a holy war, is what it is. We'll stop there today. A couple of things I need to bring to the church. But before we close, do we have any comments, continued thoughts, or additional thoughts?